So I thought a good topic for tonight would be, on Wednesday nights we focus specifically on mindfulness practice and what that is and really how to work within that the form of mindfulness meditation. So I thought tonight it would be good to speak about developing a mindfulness practice, maybe why we would, and then how we develop a practice and how we stick to a practice, and then what it is that we're doing when we practice. I think a lot of us are interested in mindfulness meditation for different reasons. I found really three kind of good reasons to get into the practice. And the first, from the most practical, kind of pragmatic perspective, is just some of the scientific base, some of the empirical base that we're finding recently in how mindfulness helps with our mental health, our psychological health, our physical health. As a social worker, we tend to try to put all of our interventions and everything that we do and work in an empirical basis. So the science is really important. And the science is relatively new around mindfulness practice, even though the practice itself has been around for 2,600 years. Over the past three decades, the mindfulness meditation has made its way into the field of medicine, into mental health, into even education. And really oftentimes used to help people alleviate stress and impulsivity. Some of the studies in particular are finding evidence in support of the neurobiological, the psychological, and the cognitive positive traits that we find ourselves with after a practice for some time. And in particular, improvements in immune and brain function, increased attention, self-regulation, memory, learning capacity, better quality of relationships between parents and children, and increased ability to prevent the relapse and reoccurrence of major depression, among many other mental health-related disorders. And so for a lot of us, I say this because a lot of us maybe find our way into mindfulness meditation because it's finding its way into our mainstream culture. It made the cover of Time magazine again recently. We have Mindful magazine. It's a very popular topic. And so this is a way that a lot of us come into the practice. And I think the second way is because the reason why we would practice meditation is because we notice a difference for ourselves. So this is more the experiential. And this is really the Buddhist encouragement, is to this word ehipasiko, to see for yourself, to investigate, to practice a little bit, and to see if there's some benefit for you. And so we can actually do that. We can come in and we can sit and we can start to put aside all of the plans and the memories and the busyness of our life, and we can start to come into the practice itself and just to see for ourselves, you know, what's the difference before we sit and after? What's the difference if we practice every day, you know, after a month, after a couple months, after 5, 10 years? I think it was the Dalai Lama said, check in to see if you're making progress in your practice about every 10 years or so, which is a kind of a lofty margin. But I myself noticed a significant degree of space around a lot of anxiety and a lot of even some of the depression that I was experiencing when I came in relatively soon. The third, and this is more of the traditional approach, reason why we would practice meditation is on a quest for enlightenment, which we don't talk about oftentimes here. But this is important to acknowledge because there are people and there are particularly monastic communities of folks that are really interested in deepening their meditation practice beyond the realm that many of us would probably be interested in, but really taking the time to spend a lot of time in solitude and a lot of time cultivating and developing these practices. And so what do we do What do we do in developing a meditation practice? In order for mindfulness to really be fruitful, we have to format our lives around it. And so the first step really is to look at our behavior. And the two kind of anchors of this in coming into a meditation practice is to start to look at forming our intention to training precepts and community support. And these are both based around intentionally developing some aspect of non-harming as a core ethical value, and developing some degree of renunciation. I'll talk about that a little bit. So formally, in taking the training precepts, what we do is we start to consider areas of our lives that we want to practice in, knowing that it will support our meditation practice itself. So it's really hard to meditate, it's really hard to develop a mindfulness practice if our behaviors are still askew and kind of a wreck in our day-to-day lives. And the training precepts are just those. They're trainings. They're not rules. They're not commandments. They're not a list of things for us to beat ourselves up on, as we will regularly find ourselves in the deep end with some of them. But more so, they're really area. It's the format. It's what holds the mindfulness and the meditation practice really together. And so traditionally, these are all generated and focused around non-harming and renunciation. And so they're things that we choose to abstain from, which is one is intentionally causing harm. And we choose to abstain from intentionally taking, which is not freely offered to us. So taking that, which is not freely offered. We also refrain from dishonest and manipulative speech, unskillful sexual behavior, and are careful with our consumptions of things that distract and discourage mindfulness. And so on one hand, we're looking at, okay, how do some of these behaviors around sexuality and speech, some of these behaviors around consumption, how do these things cause myself and others harm? And also, what are the things that really aren't serving me in my life? And am I willing, am I able to be honest about that and to start practicing letting some of those things go? And this is where you practice renunciation. My favorite definition for renunciation is not needing anything extra. So even just looking into your life, even as a reflection, I'm sure we could all find a list of a couple things. But what are the couple things for you that you feel like is taking up unnecessary space? What's kind of extra or really creating some dis-ease or some discomfort that seems to be, you know, the result of a behavior, the result of the ways we communicate or consume? And that holds the form for our practice. And what helps us hold that form is community. And we know this, having friends that we can share with authentically about where we're at in our lives, you know, some accountability in that sense of being able to have other people to be honest with. You know, it's why we come to a meditation group instead of just meditating at home or away from other people that are practicing, is because it's useful to have some of the support. It's useful to have the reminder of why we practice. And community helps us do that. The next I want to talk, and then we'll do some practices along the side of this, about developing a daily sitting practice in particular. And a good place to start is to make a commitment or set an intention to do that, and to set aside some time and a place and some space where we meditate and where we practice. It's also helpful sometimes here we'll have like 90 and 90 sit groups where people text each other and stay accountable, because it is quite hard to, it seems like, sometimes fit another thing into our very busy lives. But I like to look at meditation practice as actually the opposite. What we're doing is we're taking away, we're subtracting away, we're renouncing some things that are really extra, and taking the time to sit down and to be with what's probably, in a sense, the most valuable, which is being alive, being vulnerable, being willing to connect to our sensitivity as humans. And so picking a place and a space is some of the first thing that we can do, is really have a place in our house, our work even, that we set up. Sometimes a meditation cushion or a chair. I always suggest to set up a space where you don't do anything other than meditate there. It's kind of helpful because then you walk by it 1,000 times if you're anything like I was, and it's like, oh, that's the place I never sit, right? But it's it's there, and it's a reminder, it's a welcoming reminder that I can sit here, I can take just a minute maybe even just take a couple breaths and sit down. And that's the place that I meditate. It's a place away from all of the other things that I do throughout my day. And to set a goal and to stick to it. So maybe my goal in the beginning is I'm going to sit 5 minutes a day for the next week. No matter what, I'm going to get it done. Or I'm going to, what I would suggest is developing 20 to 30 minutes of meditation practice. And to try it out for 90 days. Develop some accountability around that. So that what I would do is I would come to this group or there are other sitting groups in Nashville and be a part of a community. So I knew I would get one in or two in at least during the week. And then to practice some forgiveness and some humility and just acknowledging, yeah, I maybe missed a day, right? And the whole thing, the whole practice around meditation is starting over, is coming back. So forgiving ourselves and just really starting over back into our intention, our goal. What we usually do is we'll alternate. I like to suggest alternating days of practice. And so we'll talk about this and pick this apart a little bit. But there are things called heart practices, and then there's mindfulness or insight practice. And what I like to do is one day I will practice mindfulness or insight practice, and the next day I'll do a heart practice, and I just alternate days. It's a good way to get a wide base of practice and to maintain something so you can track it over time. I believe faith is built mostly through experience. I think I could sit up here and say all that I want, really, but unless we do something, I know I'm stubborn in that way, unless I do something myself, I'm not as likely to believe what I hear. But once I do it and I commit to it for a period of time, I can track my own progress in a way and be able to, that faith is reinforcing. So it's experience-based faith. And it says, okay, yeah, I've spent 3 months really committing to the mindfulness practice, and this is what I noticed as a result. And because of that, you know, when we fall off or, we can get back to it because we have that experience. And when we have experience, no one can really take that away from us. So we want to take this format that we already talked about of non-harming and renunciation into the first practices that we develop. And I think that the foundation is the heart practice. And so in particular, what we would call metta practice or kindness practice. Metta practice is a formal practice that uses words, images, and feelings to evoke a kind and friendly intention towards oneself and others. So just like it's hard to meditate if our lives are a wreck, it's hard to meditate if our mental attitude is critical or judgmental. And we come up against a lot of this when we sit down, is just noticing the incessant planning and the tyranny of the mind sometimes, the harshness and the judgment and the doubt. And we don't need perfection and having this intention of kindness, but it's just an effort to develop a gentle attitude during the meditation. So as we're sitting, and whatever we're paying attention to, the breath or sound or the body or practicing insight, the most important thing, in a sense, is having a kind and gentle attitude of mind and quality of awareness. And the setup for practicing metta meditation is to, we sit quietly and we repeat phrases to ourselves and to others. We breathe in usually to the emotional center of the body. So when we experience anxiety or fear or overwhelm throughout our day-to-day life, we know in psychology that most of our emotions are felt sensations in the front of the body, so the throat, the chest, the stomach. And we usually react or tense up or tighten around those areas. And so metta practice is a building of the procedural memory to kind of click in this attitude and this intention of kindness among some of our most distressing times. So when I feel overwhelmed or I feel stressed, I can have that program already available. It's an intention. So it's not a magical wish that all of a sudden kindness and love and light or whatever is going to be rained down upon me, I wish. But it's really the attitude or developing that intention and really holding that intention in mind. So we breathe into the heart center, the center of the heart oftentimes, and we connect with a phrase as we say it. And usually I recommend not using any more than four phrases. You have an option of using images. So when we're doing metta towards ourselves and towards other beings, other people. And you can use, bring it to mind certain people and to focus on that individual or to focus on ourselves and to use the phrase and to breathe into the emotional body. And this really helps us to attune to that intention of kindness, of friendliness. So setting it up, we want to use metta phrases that work good enough for us. None of them are perfect. Some of these are, may I be at ease, may I be at peace, may I be happy, may I be kind and gentle towards myself, may I be free and unburdened, may I be safe from inner and outer harm, may I be content with things as they are. And then we practice directing the intention of these phrases inward and outward to self and others. Traditionally, this is done in five categories. You first practice offering metta towards someone that's easy to offer metta towards, so someone you feel not judged by, not threatened by. If they were to walk in the room right now, you would feel a little more at ease. Oh, my friend's here. This being is here. It can be a pet. It can be a person. You want to pick someone that's not deceased. You want to pick. You don't want to be working. This isn't a compassion meditation practice. So it's really to develop that kind and gentle, non-threatening attitude. And so it's helpful to practice towards what we call a benefactor, or someone that's easy to feel this way towards, so we can start to get that understanding of what that mind state is like. Even asking yourself the question, do you know what a kind and gentle state of mind feels like? And if not, through this practice, what we can start to do is be able to identify and to cultivate and develop that intention and that state of mind. The Buddha said that metta is appropriate in all circumstances. So I don't feel like it's much of a spiritual bypass or an avoidance strategy, because what we're doing is we're trying to be kind and gentle towards ourselves and others despite the conditions of our present experience. So even if there's anger there, even if there's sadness, even if there's fear, even if there's joy or even if there's excitement, no matter what emotions are present, it's a kind and friendly attitude with. It's all-inclusive. It's unconditional. Nothing's excluded. No part of my experience is excluded. My knee, that hurts really bad. You know, it's not going to make the pain go away, but can I be kind and gentle amidst the pain? You know, instead of saying, fuck, I'm no good at meditating and I always suck at this and I'm just going to quit. Just noticing that attitude and saying, okay, it's hard, and even kind towards that mind, and being like, oh wow, the mind's really pissed off right now. Can I be kind and friendly and gentle with the mind and amidst the pain? And this kindness, I believe, is it's always appropriate. There's never really a reason. Now, there is, and the Buddha even talked about, there is some reason for healthy regret. So if I do something and it doesn't feel so good, that's a good thing, right? To be able to, you know, have some inner conscience in that way of, yeah, that doesn't feel good when I cause harm. And so, you know, I need to be able to. But beating myself up on top of that, adding another layer of suffering on top of the pain or the conflict, isn't really actually helpful. And so we can see how this foundation is really one of the most important things to develop early on in practice, is a kind and friendly attitude. Even if we don't buy into it. Yeah. And so we can use this towards these five categories, benefactor, and then I usually practice towards myself. So as I develop towards someone that's easy to feel this way, or to develop this state of mind or this attitude around, I turn this intention inward and start practicing metta towards myself. May I be at ease. May I be kind and gentle towards myself. May I be at peace. And then we use a neutral person, someone usually that we don't have any type of feelings one way or another towards. Sometimes I use the store clerk at a place that I frequent. I have enough memory to be able to kind of get a sense for what they look like. And I hold that image in my mind and offer that intention towards this person. I've shared this before. I used this guy at the downtown YMCA for the longest time and would go in there smiling like ear to ear, and he'd be like a little weirded out, like scanning my card, because he was my neutral person, you know, this person that I practiced this intention towards. And so it kind of, you know, it's a training, and we know that you can practice sports and get good at them, and you can practice, you know, scholastic knowledge and get good at it. You practice things, you get good at them. You can also do this with mind states and emotional states. And so we want to be careful, because we don't want to use this as a bypass or a way to avoid any emotional pain or discomfort. Again, it's just including the pain and the comfort, and kind and gentle towards. Benefactor, self, neutral person, difficult person, and then all beings. What this practice has done for me is it's helped me develop bringing this intention more into my life. And so when I use these categories, I have people that are easy for me to feel this and have this attitude towards, and myself that's often difficult, but that develops over time, and a neutral person, and even difficult people, being able to touch in to their own humanity, see, you know, they're difficult for me, but they have their own challenges internally, just as I do. These people will change over a period of time, so you know, whoever feels easy to offer this metta towards right now may be different a week from now. Maybe they say something that you're not so pleased with, or, you know, and so that can change, and that's all right. If you're doing metta towards a difficult person, you don't want to pick up the 500-pound weights first. You want to go towards someone that's just kind of a little annoying or irritating. And as you continue to practice, you can start to pick up some more of the weights and say, okay, Donald Trump, I'm going to go for it. Or Hillary Clinton, whatever your cup of tea is. So, what I suggest is, as a start in doing metta practice, is to practice towards a benefactor and self, and to keep it simple. Just those two categories. It doesn't really matter if you use images or you don't use images. What matters, I think, most importantly for me, is practicing the phrases. And when you say each phrase, really feeling into what that would, what that attitude, what that state, or what the felt sense of ease and kindness would feel like as you say the phrase. You know, so as I'm offering to a benefactor, I maybe will use a visual image of this person or just kind of hold the essence or the idea of this person in front of me. And as I say, may you be at ease, I want to almost breathe in and imagine that that is available, that this person in front of me could be more at ease right now, that I have that desire for this person. Again, it's not going to magically poof happen for them, but it's more about my relationship to them. It's my that intention. So I practice towards benefactor and then practice towards self, and just keep it simple, those two categories. The phrases that we'll use, we're about to sit and practice them together. We use four, and I would stick with maybe some of these for today. You can also listen to some guided meditations. Over time, you develop phrases that sit well for you. I use, may I be at ease, may I be at peace, may I be happy. I like to set one high bar. And may I be kind and gentle towards myself. So I want to talk about, we're balancing doing heart practice and then alternating with mindfulness practice. In the beginning, really, I think what we want to do is to develop what we would ordinarily call concentration practice, which is learning to ignore the mind. Sometimes it's called breaking the addiction to the mind and being able to focus our attention on an anchor or an object that is not the mind. And so this is usually first foundation of mindfulness, breathing, sensations of sound, not going out and naming and labeling all the sounds and getting lost in them, or listening to an audio or whatever, you know, listening to a song while we meditate, but rather just the natural sense of what can be heard in this experience here. You know, breathing, sound, or the felt sense of the body, sometimes the contact points of the body against the chair, the weight. Sometimes this is the earth element, or the sense of just feeling grounded in the body. So we develop concentration, develop what I call grounding skills, and this is called samatha practice. And this is where we use and we develop our primary object of meditation as anything but thinking. I really think it's helpful to not get too creative. And if in the beginning you feel like the mind's really restless and it's really hard to be with the breath in this typical breathing meditation, then you can just use the feeling of the body sitting and sound. But I mostly think that you could do that and then practice metta until you feel more at ease and a little bit like the guard is down, you feel more settled in. And then I think it is really helpful to start to establish and develop Anapanasati, which is mindfulness of breathing. We use the breath because it's always with us as long as we're alive. It tends to be relatively neutral in feeling. You know, sometimes if we're sick, things around breathing feel uncomfortable, but you can feel your breath in the stomach, you can feel your breath in the chest, you can feel your breath at the nostrils, you can feel the whole felt sense of the body is breathing, so kind of the feeling of the body breathing. So you want to start by finding a location where you, if you're doing mindfulness of breathing to develop some concentration, some groundedness, you want to find a location in your body where you feel the breath coming and going most easily. The three areas that I usually suggest are either at the nostrils, which is a typical kind of Burmese style of paying attention to the breath, feeling the air flow through in and out of the nose or the mouth, or the rise and fall of the chest, like we did in metta practice. Or I actually, my preference for me, this is just, you know, for no reason, so use anyone that feels comfortable for you, is to pay attention to the feeling at the rise and fall of my stomach. I found that when I tried to do mindfulness of breathing early on, I would try to focus my attention too narrow of a space, and I would just get restless and feel like I couldn't do it. And so the stomach, what I would do even is sometimes even rest my hand on my stomach and just kind of feel the gentle flow of the breath and just connect to that feeling. You can utilize counting techniques as well, and I've actually found them to be helpful. My teacher hates them, but I think that they're useful. Counting the breath, what I suggest is I used George Haas, who's an Against the Stream teacher in L.A. He has a technique that I found to be very useful where I use a count 1 to 10. So I start on the first out-breath with 1. And as I say 1, I connect with the feeling of the out-breath. And then I try to connect with the feeling of the in-breath. And then I say 2 on the feeling of the out-breath. And then I stay with it and connect with the feeling of the in-breath. And then say 3 on the out-breath. And try to count up to 10 and then back down to 1 uninterrupted. You won't be able to do it, most likely. I still struggle. But over time, what you can do is you can develop some continuity of being able to stay with an object of meditation for an extended period of time. And what happens is you get this kind of effect of samadhi where the attention can kind of collect. And then we're not as overrun by the scattered effect of the mental, the mind, the spreading out of the mind and all of its things. When we give the mind something to do, because it very much likes something to do, like counting and feeling the breath, then it can have a task. And I've actually found that to be somewhat helpful. Or you can simply feel the sensation and noting when you realize the attention has move to what I call the secondary object of meditation. So this is really cool. You can't not meditate. You have a primary object, which becomes the breath or sound or the body, and the secondary object is anything else that the attention may go to. A lot of times, the attention likes to go to the thinking aspect of our present experience and to future or past or fantasy or some dreamy kind of unconscious whatever. And so we just note, we wake up to that, and the concentration helps us acknowledge that, and we know, oh, thinking. Or an ambulance comes by, and the attention goes to the sound, right? Or there's a pain in my knee, and the attention goes to the pain, feeling. And that's the secondary object, and then we come back to the primary, breathing. As we continue to practice concentration and dropping out of the thinking mind, a couple things are very common. One, developing a state of restlessness in the mind is very common. So if the mind becomes restless or agitated or irritable, that's very common. Or developing a state of extreme sleepiness and drowsiness, which is also fine and normal. It's helpful to have some techniques, in a way, I don't really like that word, but some skills or some understanding of how to work with restlessness and what we call torpor or drowsiness. Restlessness, I almost always, like we said earlier, if my mind is just really having a hard time, I will just switch to metta practice. And metta practice is a concentration practice, so it's a twofer. You can practice with the phrases, and you're also developing that collectedness of awareness in the phrase and the state of the inclining to the state of kindness. You can also, one thing that has been my primary practice for years is doing a body scan. So if the mind's restless and really agitated or distracted, your body will sense that and feel that, and it will tense and tighten around that state of restlessness. And so coming back into the body and slowly scanning down from the top of the head to the bottom of the feet, you can literally just do that over and over and over again. I think that's a very noble practice. And that will, over time, will settle, and then the restlessness will kind of lift. The key here with restlessness is to give yourself enough space and time. So sometimes I'll just remind myself of that if the mind's restless, is that I need some space. So, okay, cool, be restless. I'm patient, you know, I'm here when you're ready, kind of thing. And enough time. So really being patient about when we redirect, we're not trying to bring the restlessness into our concentration or developing attention towards our primary object, not really making the meditation something that we need to do or to fix, but really being gentle and patient the whole time. In dealing with sleepiness, which is really common as you start to develop concentration and you really get focused, you know, we tend to get really tired and drowsy, and that's also okay. It's not a problem. The main thing I think that helps with sleepiness is to develop curiosity. So sleepiness is not a problem, but just trying to see if we can check in even while it's present. So, okay, I'm tired, I'm sleepy. Whoa, you know, I keep kind of like nodding or going into the fantasies or whatever of the mind. And just being able to say, oh, hold on, can I check in? Can I wake up a little bit? You know, what is it like now? And even if we can move our attention, if the sleepiness is really overwhelming, to that being the primary object of investigation. So then we almost turn towards the state of sleepiness and say, oh, what is it like to be sleepy? Can I be curious and interested about that? Not following all the thoughts around, but the actual feeling or state of sleepiness itself. Other things we can do is you can always open your eyes. That's a very helpful practice, and one that I do often when I become tired is just open my eyes for a while, let some light in. Not looking around the room, maybe, but just fixing the gaze at a point on the floor. You can also do standing meditation, and I do this often, especially on retreat, because you deal with a lot of sleepiness. And so standing up and just doing, resuming the exact practice that you were doing before, but in a standing posture. So bringing attention back to the breath as you're standing. So I want to do just a few minutes of concentration practice, and we'll be very specific. This is only one way. There are many, many, many ways to develop samatha practice, but we're going to do a counting practice, and I'm going to give instructions before we do it instead of during. What you want to do is you want to also sit in a way that feels balanced but somewhat upright. We want to practice being wakeful during meditation, and so you want to sit that in a way that feels like you can sustain for 10 minutes. As we sit and practice together, spend the first couple minutes really checking into where you feel your breath most easily in the body, the nostrils, the rise and fall of the chest, or the stomach. Feeling into the sensation of breathing, whatever way that feels useful, starting to count the breath. You can count each breath, one on the in-breath, two on the out-breath. Or you can do the practice that I offered earlier, just counting the out-breath. Counting from 1 to 10, and then back down to 1. Being kind and gentle as the attention wanders. Noticing when the attention wanders, and then returning, starting over back at 1 every time the attention strays. And so we'll sit for about 10 minutes together. So we'll have some discussion here in a moment. I just wanted to kind of cap this off. So if you're beginning a meditation practice, it is helpful to commit to having a sitting group and a community, you know, to looking into just in general, what are some of the things, maybe there's just one or two, we don't need to be perfect, but what are some of the things in our lives that we can make space for this practice with, you know, what can we let go of, or what is taking up space and time. And then alternating, you know, practicing, okay, I have a place and a space in my house or work where I sit and where I meditate, and I have that intention and set that goal to do it. I have maybe some accountability and some support with it, really committed to do that. And we practice, you know, taking up this heart practice, this metta practice. And just trying it out for some time, seeing what that's like, and alternating the days maybe and doing some this mindfulness. In the beginning, really working on this grounding practice that we did. You don't have to do the counting if that's not too helpful, but just working with sound or the body or the breath. And if you've, and I want to speak also because we do have several people that have been coming for a while now too and have really regular daily practice and have for several years. These heart practices expand into doing compassion practice where we talk about mercy and we talk about forgiveness and appreciation practice and something called equanimity practice. And this first foundation turns into developing, once we develop some concentration, we start to practice insight meditation, which is where we start to recognize and familiarize ourselves with the secondary object of meditation. So the primary, we still ground ourselves, but we're able to start to do some investigation and develop some familiarity with impermanence and the Buddhist teaching of anatta, or the impersonal nature of phenomena, that the mind is not your mind, it's this process of memory and learning, and all of our past experiences create the conditions for thinking the way that it does, and that there's no self at the middle of it all. They're just a bunch of bundles, aggregates coming together, and we can start to investigate the process of the mind and the process of the body and the process. And we can start to investigate the tendency of the nervous system to crave for pleasure and to push away pain and to cling on to pleasant, even pleasant meditations, and being able to start to bring our investigation into these parts of our experience. And so even if I want to even offer and open up as well for folks that have been coming for a while, you know, what does your practice look like also? So this is maybe the foundation, the fundamental. This is an intro to mindfulness group. But it does change, you know, over time. So so let's have some time to hear from you guys. How was the last meditation? Any thoughts or comments that y'all have? It's open.